This is Inman's Real Estate Radio, where we go behind the scenes with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit Inman.com. Here's your host, Bernice Ross.
Welcome. Today, I'm very happy to have Lindsay Grandquist with us. She is an agent with Better Homes and Gardens Generations in Mobile, Alabama. And we have a terrific topic. Lindsay is a buyer's agent. She loves it. And she is probably one of the best examples of a great buyer's agent, you know, that I've ever seen in the business. So what I'd like to do right now is to find out, you know, Lindsay, what her secrets are of being a great buyer's agent. So Lindsay, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for the kind words. I will go ahead and say that I am in love with my buyer generation. As they're so fun to work with. These first-time home buyers, they're full of joy and emotions and excitement that I just love to see time and time again, and I still have not gotten tired of it, and I've 6 years in the business here.
So, Lindsay, tell us a little bit about your background, because you're one of the rising stars in the industry, and you're in your 20s. Could you say a little, so you've been in the business for 6 years. Could you say just a little bit more about the people that you're working with right now in your business?
Well, yes, I've been in the business for 6 years now. I live on the Gulf Coast, the Gulf of Mexico, in Lower Alabama, where we serve two offices. But yes, it's absolutely wonderful. I have decided to work mainly with buyers, although I definitely do have some listings. The reason I kind of just got attracted to the buyers is, again, their excitement, their curiosity for what home ownership is. I think that's wonderful. It's beautiful to watch. And I love the steps of life that they soon there have after their purchase. I get to know about a growing family, a new baby, the weddings. I get to be a part of all that. And it's just something that I personally enjoy. It really satisfies my heart for service. And then reason that I'm in the industry. So that's why I kind of cling to those.
Well, you know, it's kind of surprising when you say buyers to probably 90 to 95% of the agents in the industry, they just kind of, buyers, I want listings. And you don't feel that way. Obviously, you've got tremendous enthusiasm for working with them. But one of the things that I think is so important about how you conduct your business is that you really know how to whip these buyers into shape so that they will actually buy. So what are your secrets for doing that?
Very important to let these buyers know this is not a drawn-out process. This is something that kind of goes pretty quickly. But with that, it takes a sit-down meeting. I know a lot of agents, I think an issue is we get a sign call or we get a referral from someone that we've maybe sold to in the past, and we just tell them, oh, great, I'm glad that you're ready to buy. Send me the properties that you're interested in, and we'll schedule, and I'll meet you there starting at one of the properties. I think that's issue number one. We need to sit these buyers down at a conference table. We need to be across the table from them, and we need to let them know exactly how this process is going to work. We need to let them know we're going to take down a list of what their needs, what their wants are, and we're going to try and capitalize on that list as much as possible. It doesn't take looking at 20 houses. It's not what it's called for. I am here as an expert in the market, as a professional, and I'm only going to take you into the properties that it's going to fit your needs.
So when you start working with the buyer, you do a buyer's interview. You called it a needs analysis. Could you tell our listeners what that actually involves?
So I use the needs analysis, NEADS. I start with questions like, what do you have now? Where do you live now? Are you at home with your parents still? Are you in an apartment? Is that lease going to be up sometime soon? That way we know what our timeline is. Next, I move on to what do you enjoy? Do you need to be close to work? Do you enjoy going to the park, a workout class? Trying to learn a little bit more about my buyers so that with every question I'm asking them, I'm getting more and more information about the properties that I need to show them and the properties that we need to stay away from. Next, I move to the A. What do you need to alter in your current situation? Do you currently rent and now you want to own? You know, is it a tax benefit that we need? Do you live with parents and you're ready to get your own space? What is it about your current situation that we need to alter? Next, I move to the decision makers, the D is for decision makers. Who's going to be a decision maker in this entire process? Is it just you? Is it going to be also with the influence of a significant other? Or is it going to be also with the influence of a family member, someone there in the family that we also have to adhere to. And then lastly, what's the solution? So I just tell the buyer, I've heard all of your wants. I've heard what you need. I think I have a pretty good grasp on how we're going to put this game plan together. Let's do that. Here's the solution I've come up with for you.
I love this. So I haven't, in fact, that's a model I haven't heard anybody else using. So it's the needs. It's NEADS analysis.
Yes, NEADS. Now, what you enjoy, what you want to alter, decision makers, and lastly, the solution.
I want to go specifically to this decision maker part of this because that's what gets in the way with a lot of deals with younger people. It's like we get the parent who's the naysayer. How have you handled that?
Yes, the parent typically is the naysayer. They think that their daughter or their son needs to stay at home with them. They do not need to purchase. They think it's too much for them to bite off at this point in their life. They think they maybe have too much student debt in order to purchase. They're not going to be able to stay afloat, things like that. And that's why in my initial meeting with my buyers, I always ask up front, who is going to be making this decision with you? If you don't do that as an agent, we are the ones that end up having to show the properties 2, 3, and 4 times before we even get an offer because we didn't get this information up front. If you just simply get that information up front, I tell the buyers, with any showings that we do, I'll need you to get with the schedules of the other influences of this purchase, and they will also have to be there at every showing so that we can get on the same page and that all the buyers, all the decision makers, are going to all have a meeting of the mind. If you go ahead and do this up front and make everyone get on the same page and make sure everyone's working as a unit, moving us all towards the goal of a home purchase, you start to negate some of your issues with writing the contract. Okay, what's our first initial offer? Things like that.
How do you handle it when you've done a showing and the young person wants to buy the property and the parents say, no, you shouldn't. How do you handle that situation?
I tell them, once again, they need to sit down, have a dinner, whatever the case may be. The parent needs to hear the child out, and the child needs to hear the issues, the insecurities. That is typically what it is. The parent is typically insecure that they're biting off more than they can chew, would be issue number one. They don't know what they're doing, would be what the parent would say, issue number two. And issue number three, the parent is just scared for their child to take on huge debt and it be something that they personally can't get them out of. So it's the typical, the mom or the dad that says, I'm scared that you're going to take on too much. And me, as your mom or dad, I'm not going to be able to get you out of it if something were to arise, an issue were to arise. So it's just typically those simple three issues that the family members just need to sit down and kind of hash out themselves, get on the same page, and then we'll be able to move forward.
Now, one of the things that you do that I found very compelling is that you really have a great way of closing people in a very subtle way when they were looking at a property. Could you explain how you go about doing that?
I make sure I have a trigger just set in my head because, you know, once you start showing so many properties, it's not about turning on the light, opening the blinds, and pulling back the curtain. That is such a small, small task of the job that we are supposed to be doing. I have a trigger that when I walk the door and I'm getting ready to leave a property, I turn to my buyers and I say, now, if I were to tell you that this house got an offer, so let's say we're seeing it today, if I were to call you later this evening or first thing in the morning and I were to say, hey, guys, I know you liked that house, but it got an offer during the nighttime. It got an offer over the weekend. How would that make you feel? Would that hurt your feelings? I've incorporated this question into my buying process because it helps me get closer to actually writing a contract, to actually closing the sale. What I'm doing is I am directly trying to penetrate the emotions within these buyers. We may walk out of a few homes and they say, no, that's okay. Oh, that wouldn't hurt my feelings at all. But then we may walk into a property and the wife sometimes will even say, I would cry. I would cry if this house got an offer. So when I start hearing those things, those buying sounds that I should be looking for as an agent, then I go in to say, well, if your feelings would be that hurt or if you feel like you would be crying, maybe this is one that we need to move forward with. How do you feel about submitting an offer?
And I love how you just pause there. you ask the question and then you wait for them to respond. That goes back to the first one who speaks loses. That's absolutely brilliant, Lindsay.
Yes. What we're trying to do is we want to get them comfortable with saying the word yes. So we need to make sure that we're always probing questions that are getting, that's getting a yes answer.
Now, in your experience, you're a Gen Y selling to Gen Ys. What kinds of homes do people want today?
The Gen Y generation, we are looking for a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. I think that's very smart on our end. We watch the crisis. We watch the economic fall, and we are aware of what can happen and what can happen quickly, and we need some type of escape clause, if you will. And I think my generation has come to see that a 3-bedroom, 2-bath can easily be sold. It's, you can get out of it easier than a 2-bedroom or a 1-bath. And that's here in my area. I'm in a very family-oriented type of community. Anyway, 3-bedrooms, 2-bath, they just sell quicker. So I think that's something that, you know, most everyone in my generation, they're looking for. Also, that open floor plan concept is very, very important. Anything that's choppy, or if you're staying in the kitchen and you can't hear what's going on in the living room or see out the back door, these houses are really just turning off this group of buyers. We would rather have a television in our kitchen versus a double oven, which is completely different than, you know, just, you know, 10, 20 years ago. I knew if I were to talk to my grandmother about this, she would say double oven all day long. Very important. However, things have just shifted, and you can really see the transformation of that through these buyers, this group of buyers that we have. So, yes, the open floor plan, extremely important. We want to be able to see in the kitchen, the living room, French doors opening into the backyard, definitely an entertaining space, a space for fellowship, a place for gathering.
I think a lot of agents think that Gen Ys just want something that is in perfect condition, because I've heard a lot of agents say this about, oh, the buyers will only buy something that's perfect. But you're finding that's not the case with your buyer clientele. What exactly is going on with them?
So, and, you know, flips. You know, investor flips are very popular in my area, just like I'm sure they are in several areas. You know, these investors are able to pay cash to get a hold of the foreclosures and then go in and do the hardwood floors, the stainless steel appliances, the granite countertops, and the beautiful backsplash. And, yes, they're great and they're beautiful, but sometimes these buyers walk in and they say, but there's nothing here for me to do. So I would definitely disagree with agents that are saying that. Do we want something that's completely torn down and because we don't have a lot of cash that we're going to have to sink a lot of cash into? Absolutely not. But if it's something that it has real wood cabinets where we can paint the kitchen cabinets or the cabinets in the bathrooms and kind of personalize those to our touch, we definitely want to do that. If there's a yard that we can, you know, do our own flower beds and do our own design there. You know, kitchen countertops are very affordable these days. Paint is very affordable, and that would take us, you know, a weekend, you know, to get in and paint a room. Those things buyers are not scared to do.
So what you're saying is they'll buy the quality then, provided that they can fix it up without a whole lot of difficulty. They're not looking for the big knocking out the walls, but something that they can do themselves and improve. And you talked about making it customized for them. Could you kind of explain that a little bit more?
My generation, this is the first generation where we have smartphones in our hand at all times. This is the first generation that's actually purchasing properties via the smartphone. So we've learned a lot about that. This is the first generation that has these Pinterest accounts and Lowe's accounts and Home Depot accounts, so where at any given time we can be sitting, unfortunately, we can be sitting at a red light or at a doctor's office appointment or 2 a.m. in our bed, not being able to sleep, and we can easily look at everything that we can do. Our do-it-yourself projects, we can easily look at those. YouTube is phenomenal for any type of information. I can figure out myself how to build a 6-foot privacy fence or how to grout tile. And that's the beauty of it, is it's easily available. It seems easy. It can be 1, 2, 3 instructions and directions. And it's a task that we're not scared to take on.
Now, Lindsay, one of the things a lot of people are wondering is, where's the money coming from for down payments? What are you seeing in your practice?
In my area, we are blessed enough to know that we have certain areas that are available with 100% financing, no down payment areas. And that's wonderful. It's actually making a lot of home buyers that it would take them several years to save up a down payment. It's actually making them able to purchase. So that's wonderful. The next thing that's probably most frequent is going to be your gift funds that is available through either retired or deceased grandparents or deceased parents, or a wedding gift. So maybe the father of the bride or the mother of the bride, they are gifting the funds as a wedding gift to make a down payment possible for these purchases.
Now, you mentioned that in your area, there's actually 100% financing available, and I kind of went, what? Because I thought that went away with the recession. So how does that work? Is it an FHA product? Where can our listeners find that?
Yes, it is an FHA product. It's called the USDA mortgage. The house does need to be in good shape. It can need certain small things. You know, AC has to be in working order, roof, no active leaks, has to have a stove, minimal things like that, no active exposed wiring, things that are, you know, easy to find in a property. But yes, absolutely, 100% down payment, phenomenal product. And actually what is happening is if you have this product, the USDA mortgage with no down payment, and you have the seller paying all of your closing costs, what actually happens at closing is that the buyers are getting a refund of their earnest money check because they do not owe anything. They are not putting a down payment down, nor are they paying their own closing costs, so they're getting that check back at closing. They are getting paid at the closing table in order to move forward with the home purchase process.
So what's going to be interesting in the long term to see if those people walk away if we, you know, when we hit the next downturn. Now, the final questions I wanted to ask you is the internet offers so much information, but are the buyers really educated when they come to the purchasing process?
Yes, they are somewhat educated. But what I really enjoy about this industry is that they come to me and they say, look, this is what I've heard. This is what I've read. Is there any truth to this? How much of this can I believe? And that is when it reminds me as a real estate agent in this industry that I have a very sturdy and long-term job. Yes, they can get all of this information online, and it's readily available, and you can read articles all day long about the joys of homeownership or the horrible things that have happened with homeownership. But they always want to come to us and offer them, if you will, a cosign of what is this information accurate? Is this true? Can I follow this process and procedure, or do I need to go another route? And when I start getting questions like that, that is just a reinforcement that real estate agents and that our industry were needed, because even though they have this information, they still want us to certify it for them, to confirm it for them, and to help them make sure they do not make a mistake in their home purchase.
Lindsay, anything that you'd like to add before we wrap up? Because this has been a fascinating interview, and you've just given us so many great takeaways for working with buyers. Anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, the last thing that I will take note of is this is also the generation, unfortunately, that has had a massive, massive amount of student loan debt. Most people in my generation, luckily, they have some type of college education, and that's wonderful. You know, it helps with job stability. It helps with finding jobs after college and after high school, things like that. But unfortunately, it has left us in mounds and mounds of debt. So the last thing I would make sure to note is if you have a buyer that has this debt or their DTI is too high, anything like that, just keep them in your pipeline. Keep in touch with them. Something will eventually turn around. Those people deserve to be homeowners as well. And if we can offer them anything, a budget, anything that we could offer them as a real estate professional to get them moving towards having the American dream, let's make sure we do that.
Thank you, Lindsay. We've been visiting with Lindsay Grandquist. She's an agent with Better Homes and Gardens Generations in Mobile, Alabama, and she's been talking about how to turn your buyers into a major profit center for your business. Lindsay, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
This is Bernice Ross, and thank you for joining us for MN Real Estate Radio. Be sure to tune in next Thursday when we'll be back with the industry's movers and shakers to learn what's next for real estate. For more insight, news, and analysis, visit MN.com. Make it a great day.